But I think there's a fundamental question here. Is like, is that the only thing though? Is there something there that we're not picking a finger on? You know, is it like people are not worried of doing and bothered about coaching anymore?
Welcome to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast, where we aim to give swimming the coverage and publicity it deserves. Every week, we celebrate the sport we love with amazing special guests and topics from around the swimming pool. And now, here are your hosts, Scott and Dan.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to what is going to be a very special episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott, and back with me, as always, is my trusty co-host, Dan. Now, on this podcast, we've discussed some amazing topics in the world of British swimming, from how a year's delay in the Olympic cycle affected those at the very top of the sport with the man himself, Adam Peaty. We've talked to Duncan Scott about his incredible major meet schedule. And today's talk is going to be right up there with one of our bests. But it's a slightly worrying topic that we're going to be talking about in the swimming sphere.
Yeah, worrying and interesting at the same sort of time. So it's a very interesting episode that we've got lined up for you guys this week. We're going to be celebrating our guest's awesome accomplishments as well during his incredible 26, 27 year career. But also, like Scott was alluding to just then, we're going to bring up some questions that have to be raised that affects very much, well, it very much affects our sport in the future.
Yes, so we will be talking about amazing career, delving into the bigger questions of the sport. So do stay around for the whole episode. But first of all, let's bring on our guest. And the man is, quite frankly, a legend within our sport. I hope he doesn't mind me saying that. He's been part of many swimmers' journeys, including the likes of Olympic champion Becky Adlington, Paralympians Sam and Ollie Hind, and Charlotte Henshaw, as well as many, many more. And that man is, of course, Glenn Smith. Glenn, thank you for joining us on the podcast this week. How are things with you?
Absolutely fine. I'm speaking to you, it's a bit dark out there. I think autumn's finally arrived. And it's a bit dark for coming over training now. So we know that winter's about around the corner now.
Yeah, it really is. And we very much appreciate you giving up your evening to talk to us. Glenn, we invited you onto this podcast after a tweet of yours last week caught a fair few people's attention. Yeah. A fair few. Yeah. I'm sure your mentions were dinging all evening long. And that was regarding the coaching vacuum that this country is currently experiencing. Now, the aim of this podcast isn't going to be to answer all of those questions, especially not that any of the three of us ask, Glenn included. He's welcome to fire anything our way. But they're very much questions that need to be brought to everyone's attention. So first of all, let's start off with a little bit of context to the situation in this country. Now, you put out a tweet saying coaching vacuum. So how bad, in your experience, is it right now with vacancies in this country?
Well, if you could only go on the fact that what you see on the coaching aquatics, or careers in aquatics, sort of site, and you've seen the last time I looked, I think there was something like 22 coaching vacancies, not all sort of, and we're talking sort of general coaching vacancies here. We're not talking about governing body posts or Swim England posts here. A lot of like sort of general coaching posts, and I see that sort of rang alarm bells with me. But it sort of reequates to me that the issues that we've had in Nova recruiting coaches. I think there are probably some issues out there that I can't really particularly put my finger on, but it is worth some sort of bringing up. And I think, you know, what is the situation with, you know, people probably are, is people not really wanting to go into the profession anymore? Are there barriers there that need to be talked about? I mean, obviously the biggest one comes around to money, but is it only just money? Is it just about money? I'm not sure it is. Is it about coach education? Is it about the certification process, or whatever people want to bring up? I've got no obviously stats. I mean, obviously there was 22 posts. I think 23. I think I looked at on the careers in aquatics post, but obviously I've got. No, I mean, that's only what we can see. We don't know what else is out there. I mean, there could be a lot more than that, you know, to me. And so I've got no stats, obviously. I know official stats, and I don't profess to have them at my fingertips. I don't. But I think that's only what we can see. So, you know, so I don't, you know, where do we go from there? You know, that's it.
Well, I mean, we were talking beforehand and you were telling us a club like Nova, and Nova is a well-established club with a very good reputation, was struggling to get applicants for positions, which to me is wild.
I think there's other factors in all this. Like I say, it could be like, but I think it probably comes down to finance and cost a bit, I think. And obviously clubs now, a lot of clubs are finding it difficult to recruit, mainly because the finance issue. And I think obviously as soon as you're trying to bring coaches from outside your own area, if you like, and you're asking them to move or up sticks and move into the area, it's better if they do move into the area because of the travel costs and everything else. Then it is difficult, I think, because you're asking people to either rent property, buy a property. You've then got a travel cost all on top, is it? So it's all, that's all sort of intertwined with it all. But I think there's a fundamental question here is like, is that the only thing though? Something there that we're not picking a finger on, you know, is it like people are not worried of doing and bothered about coaching anymore? I think the pandemic has had an issue. I don't know what you guys think, but my thoughts around the pandemic are that there wasn't too many coaching courses obviously taking place during that period. It was a good nearly 2 years before everything got back on its feet, and we're only just finding that. So there's a sort of a certification vacuum there as well, you know, to get people sort of on courses and going through the system. And it does take time, you know, for that to happen. But equally, I'll just say my piece now before I let you guys jump in. I think there's something about actually coaches gaining experience as well, enough experience to apply for other positions, and I think that's another thing that I can throw in there somewhere. You know, how do coaches gain that experience to move through the pathway?
Yeah, I mean, the big question throughout the whole podcast really is about why is swimming struggling to find these coaches? But if I flip it a little bit, why should people get into coaching? What is the positives and benefits from being a swimming coach?
Well, when I started back in now, I was probably a bit, you know, we're going back to 1996 now when I started professional coaching, and obviously before that I was sort of voluntary coaching for 5 years. So, and I think obviously there's a desire, why do people want to get into teaching? You know, it's the same sort of feeling, I think. You want to do something, it's almost providing a service, I think, for people. I think there's that, and they said, and I think if you're involved in sport as a younger person, you want, you know, what you go if you, and for me, I was a competitive swimmer myself. I finished when I was 23. I still wanted to be involved, so the next step was going to coaching. So there's quite a lot of, and I would imagine that's quite a lot of people's route, that they've been competitors and then moved in, but that's not the only route. You know what I mean? So I'm not saying that's what has to happen. That's the way I went through it.
Yeah, it's interesting. If we talk about that route then, as ex-swimmers going into the sport, maybe that is where COVID's had a big effect, because it was 2 years or a year and a half that some of these kids would have been out of the pool. They very much may have moved on from the sport instead of this pathway of ex-swimmer turning into a squad coach volunteer, turning into a paid coach and then head coach. Maybe that the base of the pyramid has been lost due to the pandemic. That could have been what we're seeing right now.
I think that's a distinct possibility from my, you know. I mean, it's just trying to I don't know. I mean, it's, like I say, there's no easy answer to this, but I think there was nothing there happening, was there, for 2 years in effect, really, and I think the good thing about it is now that there seems to be more support for coaches in Swim England. It's more camps, there's more opportunities coming through the system, but it's getting people into the sport that's the difficult, to coaches and then through the door. And I think that's, in some respects, I think that's something of it. Do you know what I mean? And I think it's because I think the system is, once you're in there, there's good things happening,
You're looked after, yeah.
And I think
getting through the door in the first place, isn't it?
It's better than it was, put it that way. And I've just become one of the Swim England coach developers, because they've advertised the Aspire and Inspire program, and I'm one of the coach developers, and I'll be mentoring some coaches going forward, in the East Midlands, that is, in my local region. So there is things like that happening, once you're in there, but the coaches on there are obviously fairly established coaches, they're in work and doing what they know, So, but it's actually the amount of coaches underneath that level coming into the sport. And what is my other thing, I'm going to throw this one, is what do people think of coaching now? Do they think it's a profession, or do they think it's still a pastime that you do on the side? That's another one to be throw a spanner in the works there.
It's very interesting, because for me it becomes I don't know whether it's a profession right at the bottom of that pyramid, whether it becomes a profession kind of halfway up it. Does that make sense?
Yes, I think so. Yes, it does. But in order to get the experience, you need to go. I mean, I can remember. I had to, in order for me to apply for the job in Mansfield, when I said it was all right. I didn't know I was going to do that, but subconsciously, I worked as a volunteer, working in local clubs, as we all done. And clubs wouldn't survive without volunteer coaches or volunteer administrators and all the rest of it. But in order to get that experience, that's what I had to do, And I don't want to decry anybody, but to get up the ladder, you've got to start at the bottom of the ladder, to get that experience. It's very rare that people start halfway up it, and that's another thing. So when you're applying for positions, who are the people coming through to apply? Have they got enough experience in order to do it? You know what I mean? And that's another thing.
Yeah. So I'm guessing the first conclusion of this podcast that we're sort of arriving to is right at the bottom of that pyramid isn't attractive enough for people, and there's not enough of them working to build up their experience to get to the profession level.
Maybe not, maybe. Yes, wouldn't say that. The total thing, but I think it sounds quite a good answer.
So that's, I'm sure, one point
opinion, but I think that's not a bad start, really.
So what is the barrier at that very first level to get qualified? What is the cost of a coach becoming qualified? Dan, you've done it.
Well, it's getting ever more expensive every year at the moment, just like all the bills are with petrol, electric, everything else, I'm trying to think when I first did it. I think that I got it through the club. The club paid for me to do my level one and level two. But if you didn't do it through a club, you're paying, not far away from £1,000 just to do the course. Which, of course, if you're doing volunteer work, it's quite difficult to find £1,000, if you're not getting paid. So that's one hurdle. I think money is a big issue. And it's not the only issue, but it is a big issue, especially when coaches are basically part-time or self-employed salary sort of hours, and there's no sick days or holiday pay or anything like that, so it can't really be encouraging or appealing to young people looking at jobs. That's my thinking about it anyway.
I think there is a an issue about certification, but we're in a world where everything's certificated and you've got to do it. And I think my issue is, if you're keen to get, you'll find a way of doing it. But I mean, and I don't think we need to put people in difficult positions there, because obviously people are having difficulty. The cost of living crisis is in everybody's minds at the moment, you know. So, but I think, you know, I think it's not, my thing is about, if you're really passionate about coaching, you'll probably find a way. And there are grants out there from the your local county association, your regional coaching, regional governing body. So there are some things. I'm not saying it's the answer, but there are some ways of doing that. But I think it's also quite a major commitment to do those certifications as well. I think level one is a fair course. It takes a fair while. The level two is a good. I've had somebody in my program taking the level two recently, and it's took a fair while. You know what I mean? Yeah. So and it's good. It's, you know, 3 or 4 months at least to get it all done. It's not nearly 6 months. You know, by the time if you don't get on with it. So I think that's something. There is issues like that. My thing is, like you've just said, when we came to a bit of a conclusion, we need to be able to, somewhere down the line, there's a way of, we need to find a way of encouraging coaches into coaching, and people, you know, encouraging them onto the poor side. And, you know, that's how I got involved, you know. So, but the ex-swimmer is always a good route. That's to encourage ex-swimmers to get into coaching. Like I say, somebody once told me something that it's an Einstein thing. This is it. So, you know, experience is the only form of knowledge. So you gain your experience, you know, my thread that's always been through my. Yes, I've got my qualifications, but I needed to get the experience in order to move up the ladder, you know.
I wonder if coaching is perceived as a proper job in this country, like a legitimate, respectable job. If you go over to America and you're a swimming coach, then you're a relatively big deal, and that's the reason why they get paid well, and that's the reason why they have so many coaches there. But I don't know if it's perceived as a proper job over here. I don't know if that's the same with what you guys are thinking.
I think, I think you're right. Yeah, I mean, you know, people still come up to me nowadays, and I'm coming up towards 57. I think people have said, you know, oh, you're a swimming coach. So, you know, wow, you know, people actually get paid for that? So they're the sort of reactions I've got over the years, you know, so...
I wonder if the respect for that comes as, hopefully, this generation of swimmers that are coming through gives a bit more
attention
to the sport.
There's more of a profile now, isn't there? And it certainly is more than when I first started now. And the success that Great Britain swimming have had, particularly the few latter years that we've just had, I think that has promoted the sport better. But obviously now we were kicked in the teeth by the pandemic. Obviously we couldn't do much about that, and then the cost of living crisis is another kick in the teeth. But what I don't want to, what I'd hope is that this is just a blip in the system, and we do start to see those vacancies being filled. And I mean, the ideal situation is that clubs invest in their own people.
Yeah. And I think, is that something you do at Nova?
Well, we've tried to, obviously. But again, it's trying to get from bottom upwards into, you know, and we found that, you know, it is a difficult thing. And we have tried to invest in people that wanted to take the level three, because obviously with a squad situation, we ask for a minimum qualification of level two.
Okay.
Purely and simply because we need people to have the experience to come in and do the job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, because we're talking at people working at regional, regional level and national level and above. Yeah. So, there is a minimum qualification that we require. But that's not to say that if somebody wanted to take the level three and when they get into our situation, then we do sort of, we do look at the possibility of providing them with a grant, which on top of a regional grant, something from the county ASA might go some three quarters of the way to paying for the full course. And then obviously, that's hopefully what we do. But obviously we've got base clubs underneath that obviously struggle to get coaches, you know. So, but like I say, rather than try and advertise for people to come in, is it not better to advertise for people that are already there? Is it not better to invest in the people there? And I think that's, you know, people are always looking for the Bill Sweetnam to come through, to come in.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they're not out there. You know what I mean? And, you know, they're not always out there, you know.
I wonder if the model that Nova has and Near Swimming Club Daventio has as well, where you've got kind of the feeder clubs going up to the parent club and they all look after each other and it's very intertwined. I wonder if that model needs to be explored a little bit more around the country, because there are clubs that will sit by themselves and coaches have their own little ego, but you don't have much of an ecosystem or little to help develop coaches coming through. Whereas if you are intertwined with other clubs like you guys are, there is a lot more opportunity to pick up that 1X swimmer that wants to be on poolside.
Yeah, so you're correct, and I think that is. I think with Nova, we've been going that long now. It's over. It's nearly 40 years. Some 40 years now, and beyond my time even. So I think that sort of model is not. There are very few now local authorities and involved in swimming. That's another factor you see now. Well. So with me taking early retirement, my local authority are not going to be. They're still going to be involved in some ways, but not in the full. They're not going to be financially looking after the squad. So the county ASA and Nova are going to be looking after the squad system in Mansfield. But that's just the way that things are evolving, you know. So, but there again, my local authority in Mansfield have looked after the squad for 30 years. So they're just looking at different ways and different models of how to operate, and you know, just for swim squads, and obviously for sport and things like that. So, but that's another option. But there's not many local authorities now that are funding swim squads. That's another matter for another night. But in terms of us, we've got underpinning clubs. Yes, there is a nice, you know, obviously the swimming pathway is there. Mm. You know, the coaching pathway, you know, is there, but it could be better. But it's all about encouraging, you know, the local base clubs have got to encourage their coaches to come through. And then if coaches want to come in along and actually, even if they want to attend the odd sessions and get experience, our door is always open for that, we've always done. And that's one of the, and that's how I got involved as well. You know, I went over to try and get some experience. I went down to Loughborough and did some sessions with Ian Turner, as it was then. Mm. And then I did some sessions. Obviously, every Saturday morning, I drove down to Nottingham and worked with Bill. You know, and that's how I got my experience. You know, so I think it is. Something is about, as well as local clubs investing in their own individuals. Now, local clubs are probably throwing their arms up in the air and coming back to me and saying, we haven't got the money to do that, you know. But I think that's one way of actually keeping those coaches into the sport and giving them some encouragement to move through the pathway. And then, you know, I'll give you just an example. If somebody's in a local club in my area. It might be somebody comes through the pathway, they get on a course that's in their own club. They could then get in touch with me. I could say, well, why don't you come down and work me, move me in one, two or three sessions a week or one session a week. They get the more experience then. And then if a job came up, they're ideally placed to to take it on board. And that's the pathway that I would see, you know, to me. That's, you know, but equally that person has got to want to do get that more experience. And I think there's sometimes that's where other squads could be more sometimes, I think, more proactive, maybe. I don't know.
So well, from our personal experience from running this podcast, if anyone is wanting to broaden their horizons and basically add to their experience, like Glenn is saying, just ask. Like from running this podcast, you send a message to someone, the swimming world is fairly small. Like people will reply, people will help you out. We went to the AP Ultimate Race Clinic last weekend and they opened their doors and Jamie Main showed round like 8 coaches every 3 hours. And that's how many they had going through the door and watching an elite process. I think if you want the experience, just ask, it will be there. People will help you out.
Well, equally, somebody like Jamie Main came through and worked with Bill. And then, and he was when, and I used to coach Jamie on occasions. He was based in Nottingham at the time. I used to coach Jamie on occasions. So he, again, an ex-swimmer that came through the system. Took his certificates, was involved in his local club, did some experience there, and then got more experience with Bill and came through the pathway and went up. So there's quite a prime example there of somebody as an ex-swimmer coming through the system. And now he's virtually at one of the top end of our sport. So, you know.
He is, yeah.
Well, something that we haven't actually brought up is the unsociable hours. How much of a factor do you reckon that is on getting these younger coaches inspired and taking up the coaching profession?
Well, it's not easy. I mean, but I think that's a. I think this is where the passion for the sport comes through. You know what I mean? I mean, all right. I'm probably, you know, I'm getting to the point where I'm taking early retirement. As some of you know, I'm taking early retirement at the end of the year. I've done my fair share of getting up at 4:30, but. You know, so that's one thing I am looking forward to at the end of December. I don't have to worry about that. But when I first started, I think you're so passionate about the sport that I never gave it a more of a thought too much. And then because you want to try and get things moving, you want to be trying but get successful. And if you want to get into the, and it's the nature of the beast of our sport, unfortunately. It's always early mornings and later evenings because it's our sport is facility based. It's not, you can't run out of, it's not a football pitch, you know, where can you run out at any time, you know, we have to, and we're fighting for space and fighting for time and fighting for those, you know, to me, fighting in that space of where we can get into the pool. So, but it is a factor, definitely. And I think, you know, I think, but not so much with local clubs, I don't think. I think most clubs won't necessarily be doing it won't be in there at 6 o'clock in the morning. Some might be. Some of the bigger clubs obviously are. You know, there's more of the performance related clubs, they would be more sort of there. But
not the people at the very first step of the ladder are going to be doing all of these early mornings straight away, are
they? No, they're not. Very unlikely, I would think. So but I think people seem to think that that's what you'd be doing when you first started. It's not.
Yeah.
I think as a volunteer, that's somewhere down the line, I think, you know, we want to get involved in, you know.
Maybe that's what scares off the ex-swimmers. They're fed up of these early mornings, but they don't quite realise that the barrier to entry isn't the early mornings.
No, I think that's it. And I think, and you know, there is some sort of, you know, you're not only working with swimmers, you're working with parents as well. And that's a skill that you've got to learn. But again, only by gaining experience when you're coaching, do you actually learn the skill. It's like, you know, working with people, and that's what you're in. Yeah. That's what you're doing. You know, at the end of the day, you're working with people, and you know,
factor, because most clubs' committees are made up of parents. Some may have some swimming knowledge. Some may not have any at all. Is that a problem also?
Yeah, well, that's funny. When I put my tweet out about that, that was quite a lot of comments coming back on that subject.
Mm, okay.
Whereas if you become a professional in, you know, or you're paid employee of the club, your bosses tend to be volunteers. So you're more qualified than the actual people. I will rephrase that. More qualified in the sport that you're doing than the people running the club.
Yes.
So that is a barrier that in this country does put people off.
I mean, you wouldn't see that in any other profession, really, would you?
No, you don't. You know, that's it. So you know, and I mean, I've been very lucky. I've worked for a local authority all my life. You know, I've not had a committee structure to work with, so I'm perhaps not the best person to comment on that sort of thing, because I've not had the experience of working for a committee. Mm. But I've still worked with a committee. Because I've still worked with the Nova Centurion Committee, which is the club outlet that we have to. So, but obviously they're not employing me.
Mm.
So, whereas a lot of club coaches are employed by the committee. So, and that becomes more of a, you know, when it's quite a difficult structure that to work to. And this is why it does put a lot of coaches off, because it's usually, you know, it only takes one word in the wrong place, and then you're into sort of disciplinary issues, and you know, that does cause, you know, some major issues around, you know, encouraging coaching in coaching. And I think that's a hurdle that I don't know when we'll be able to resolve that, but there is some thought around what do we do about that. But unless coaches, like they do in the States, run their own clubs. And that's another big thought, you know, whereas, because coaches actually run their own, so in other words, the coach actually owns the club.
Is that the way of thought?
Yeah.
Is that how Ash Morris and Hamilton Aquatics run? I'm trying to think from our podcast with them over in Dubai, because he says it's very much a business. I'll have to have a chat with
him. Yeah, and that's it. They, I'm not sure about the club in Dubai, but I think that a lot of clubs, obviously in America, makes a different situation altogether. But you're almost then looking after yourself, if you like. So that's another barrier for trying to recruit coaches into the sport. You know, into the sport. Do they want to have their employers? You know, they're sort of line manager, little Johnny's dad.
I can imagine it's a lot more of an attractive job opportunity if it is run like a business and the boss is like really invested in the squad as a whole, because he's the head coach.
Correct. Yeah,
I can see that straight away. That's a whole lot more attractive of a job to me.
It is.
But then swimming is run by volunteers, and so I don't think anything is likely to change. I mean, I'd be amazingly surprised if anything vastly changes.
But it's a thought process that that's way some people, you know, that's the way that when I was talking to Mike, so a lot of the comments I was getting back as well, but you know, professional current coaches are being line managed by volunteers, and it seemed to be an ongoing sort of, you know, that seemed to be a thread that I had running through everything, which with all due respect, I hadn't got the answer for. it is one of those things. But I think I'd like to think that I'll go back to this investing in coaches and smaller clubs trying to, you know, there's a lot of times I've seen over the years where smaller clubs have advertised for coaches, and they may have somebody within their own club who could actually do the job. You know what I mean? and they're expecting somebody to come out from God knows where to solve the problem, you know.
Yeah, you get rid of that cost.
And then they never actually fill that position.
So then
they're struggling to get somebody to take sessions, look after his kids, etc. You know, I'm not saying it's the whole reason, but you know, I think some of it is people, you know, trying to invest in coaches or coaching.
I just think we need to give swimming more. I think we should give swimming the limelight more. You know, it needs to be more attention on it, more eyes on it, because we've had massive success in Tokyo, and we should be celebrating that success. I know, even like a year after, we should still be talking about it. How well we did! We were the top sport in the whole country, and I still feel like we're behind other sports, almost like living in their shadows for some reason. I don't know why, but we are the top sport in the country. We have athletics is talked about more for some reason. Diamond League is always on the telly. Why isn't swimming on the major TV channels, you know, BBC, ITV, whatever?
That's a lot bigger question you're asking there.
Well, that's another one for another time again. But yeah.
I
think in all of this conversation, Dan, and Glenn, you've given some amazing points. There is two people on this podcast who can relate very personally to this question of why aren't there more coaches? Because both me and Dan clearly love the sport of swimming. We run a YouTube channel, we run a podcast, we put hours and hours into propulsion swimming, and neither of us are in coaching. So we have our own personal reasons. So I'm not trying to throw ourselves under the bus, but let's talk about why we aren't in the sport in terms of actually coaching athletes. And obviously running this channel now takes a big time away, which is why we don't have time to get involved in coaching. But before we started this channel, I wasn't coaching. I wasn't in the sport of swimming. And I guess I just completely lost connection with my old club. As I went back to university, there was no reason for me to go back. Does that make any sense? I had moved on. So I don't know whether... maybe that's one. There needs to be more outreach to old club swimmers to bring them back when they have gone to university. I know I'd half given up the sport, but I was still swimming socially. It's another topic. What about you, Dan? Why were you not involved in coaching? Because there's two personable experiences here.
So I was involved in coaching not so long ago. I mean, this was before COVID. In fact, actually, COVID was part of the problem why I did stop, actually, because I was coaching 2019. And then, of course, March 2020, that's when everything went into lockdown. And that's obviously when my coaching stopped. But before that, I was questioning it anyway, mainly because of social hours. And really, the main reason for me was because at the club I'm at, and I'm sure there's many different clubs across the country as well, during competitions over the Saturday and Sunday, maybe even Friday as well, most coaches don't get paid for that. And to me, that was just, it kind of blew my mind. You're on poolside, let's say 10, 12 hours for the day, both Saturday and Sunday, and I didn't get paid at all. So it felt as though I was being a volunteer for, the reason I did it is because I loved the sport and I wanted to help the kids get their times, etc., etc., whatever the target meet was. But for me personally, it felt like especially for the bank finances and stuff like that, it just felt like I was wasting my time, you know. But that was my reasoning for it anyway, the social hours and the money side of it. And then of course, since we started this, obviously the time hasn't been available to do it, so
time has disappeared. But you're a teacher now instead of a coach, and swim teaching, like we were just saying about committees and everything, swim teaching is ran as a business. So to you, that is a lot more attractive because you know you have the security of it's a business.
Yes. That's true. I mean, they're still missing. We talk about the coaching having a coaching vacuum, but there's still a lack of swimming teachers as well. So it's not just the top end of coaching, but it's also the lower end as well. So it's across the whole spectrum, which is an issue.
My own facility in Mansfield, they're always desperate for teachers. So that's a similar situation. You know, we can go open up another can of worms there why isn't there enough swimming teaching? So I think that's another issue. But here's another thought. Why are we just talking to you don't see many coaches come from university into coaching now.
True.
So they tend to go into sports science.
Yeah.
and they'll do physiology, or they'll be practitioners in terms of physiology, etc., etc. But there's not too many that come from university and go into coaching. So there might be the few, but there's not too many that have come that route either. Okay. I say, tend to come more into the sports science route, more the practitioner route of, you know, the physiologist or the nutritionist or the general sports science guy that you use. And, and so that's, that's another thing, I've not seen too many of that. Nathan uses interns from Trent University and University of Nottingham. And they're all sports science interns. Yeah, so, but none of them actually, they do help out on the pool side, but it's more on the sports science front. It's not too many come in that as an intern who want to do, I want to be a coach. Yeah. So, they want to be a sports science practitioner. Yeah. So whether they can see a better pathway of salary, opportunities, jobs, that may be a thing, I think.
So almost coaching at university has got too professional for swimming? Like they see the broader horizons?
Yeah. I mean, it's still, I think obviously there's still coaching degrees and it's still there. But I don't see too many, the people we have been in contact with more or less want to, they obviously see there's a better career prospects in going into, being a physiologist or a nutritionist or that sort of pathway, rather than just going, I want to be a coach, But again, the person coming out of the university needs to start at the lower end of the ladder in order to get back up the ladder. Whereas I think if you're a practitioner or as a physiologist, you can start somewhere up the ladder. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I think that's an attractive proposition for somebody, maybe, So we're losing some people there as well.
Yeah,
so
maybe people aren't just willing to do the little steps at the start. They just want to do one big one and go straight up to the Loughborough Bath area, Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to put that out as a sweeping statement because that's wrong. But it is a factor. Sure that the coach out there that really wants to start and get as much experience as possible and go through. But there is a factor in that, I think, in what you're saying.
Glenn, we've talked about loads. I think there's so much there for people to take away and discuss. And I think
in 45 minutes we're never going to find it.
No, exactly.
the ultimate solution to it, but it is worth talking about. it has concerned me when I saw the amount of vacancies and even us trying to fill posts and. What is going on out there? What is the thought process behind it? It's created a bit of a discussion, and maybe somebody out there is actually enlisted, and maybe somebody can delve into it a bit more and come up with some sort of viable answers to it. Yeah.
Well, I think a really good place to end this podcast would be, what advice would you give for any young coach who is just starting out their coaching career or looking to get into the sport? Because you've got 27 years of experience, medals on the biggest stage to your swimmers' journeys. How would you help a coach?
As we've talked about starting out in coaching and I made an effort to go and see other people and actually learn about the sport and gain some experience with the best. And I was very lucky. I was mentored by the best, and that was Bill Furness at the time. And he told me one thing, and it's always stuck with me. It's like, And he always said, don't stand still too long, or otherwise somebody will go past you. And what I mean by that, what he meant by that was that, you know, if you don't move and gain enough knowledge and keep gaining enough knowledge and trying to make keep up with new trends and things like that, what's happening out there in coaching, trying to learn new things, you're going to get left behind. So what he meant was that don't stand too long in one place because somebody's going to go straight past you, you know. So and that, and I think that's always stuck with me, that, you know, try and make sure that you know, you're trying to get that little bit of a extra knowledge that you didn't think you had before, you know. So go ring the guy up who you thinks you is the bigger club next to you and see if you can go down on a Saturday morning, or, you know, kind of come down and work with you for a couple of hours on X session, or, you know what I mean? That to me is the way I learnt and gained more experience, you know. So
I like what I was saying, the swimming world is quite small as well. So,
sorry,
swimming world is quite small. So it's, sorry, the swimming world is quite small. So it's, you know, it's quite easy to message these guys, and they're more than likely going to say, yeah, just come down for a session or a weekend and see how it's all run, and we'll bounce ideas off each other. That's, I imagine most coaches will say yes to that.
Yeah. So, well, you would hope so, wouldn't you? And I think that's, and I know I have, you know, if anybody's rang me, no, you know, within reason, we've got to sort of sort it out a little bit, but there's never been a barrier to that from my point of view. And I think, you know, that's one of the things I'd like, you know, with this mentoring thing, I'm trying to, are we trying to encourage other people to do so, you know, I think, and from my point of view, trying to encourage them to gain more knowledge, I think. And what do they think about their own programs, and what do they think that can be improved, and, you know, so taking a little bit of responsibility, and, you know, so I think from a young coach, but he's trying, you know, coming through the system, he's trying to gain as much knowledge as he can and gain experience. Don't be trying to be insular in your own world, you know. It's a bigger, you know, there's some things to learn out there, you know, and put into practice.
Definitely. Glenn, thank you so much for coming on to this week's episode of the Professional Swimming Podcast to talk through what is a very big topic and just give us your opinions. If we don't speak before now, best of luck with the early retirement in December.
Yeah.
Enjoy the lies in.
Yeah, I'm not planning on going off the face of the earth, so you will still see me knocking around on the odd occasion, but I will be taking a bit of a step back from, you know, I still might be doing the odd few hours, a little bit of coaching, but not the 25 hours that I've been doing.
Very much deserved.
That's it.
All right. Cool. So that just about rounds up this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. If you haven't subscribed already, please do so on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. And Dan, we'll be back in 1 week's time.
Yeah, thank you for listening, everyone, and we'll catch you on the next one.
You've been listening to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast with Scott and Dan. We want to thank you for joining us and invite you to subscribe to the show, as well as checking out the Propulsion Swimming YouTube channel for weekly tutorials and videos to get your swimming fix. We will be back next week. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one.